Welcome to the Inside Look at Legal podcast, a podcast by lawyers and experienced litigators, bringing you an inside look at today's legal practices. Hosted by Keith Miller, Butler, Schneider, and Pollack. Learn more about the firm at www.arkattorneys.com. And now, let's begin today's Inside Look at Legal.
Welcome to another edition of Inside Look at Legal. I'm Mason Voling, an associate attorney at Keith Miller, Butler, Schneider, and Pollack, and I'm very pleased to have with us today Kristen Pollack from the firm and Victoria Bruton from the firm. Welcome, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
And today we're going to be talking about some myths in the world of domestic relations, child custody, divorce, so on. Kristen, why don't you jump right into it? What are some things that maybe are the conventional wisdom, but aren't exactly true?
Right. So, okay, everyone knows someone who's gone through a divorce. Everyone. I mean, it's one of the most common areas of law that bring people into the courtroom and bring people into conflict. And so most of the time before someone goes to visit a divorce lawyer, they maybe talk to their cousin, their brother, their coworker, you know, their doctor, their Sunday school teacher about what divorce is going to entail. And so I have a lot of people come in and they have real preconceived notions about how child custody works and what the ground rules are. And it doesn't matter how much education you have or, you know, where you're from. These are the just prevalent myths that people come in with. And I found that one of the number one myths that folks come in with about child custody is the idea that there's this magic age that when your child reaches that age, they can all of a sudden choose which parent they live with. And so folks come in and they'll be like, well, my child has just, he's turning 13 in August, so he gets to pick where he lives, right? And that's just simply not true.
Well, Victoria, what is true about that? Let's say I'm getting a divorce. I have a 13-year-old child. He appears to have a preference for who he wants to live with. What is the court? Is the court going to care at all about that?
Well, what I tell people is exactly what Kristen has said, is that, A, there is no magic age in which the court is going to just say, oh, okay, your 13-year-old son can dictate where he or she wants to live. What I do tell people is that that 13-year-old, the court will listen to that child and take that. That's just one of the factors that the court will take into consideration when they're trying to make a custody and visitation determination. Oftentimes, the courts in Benton and Washington County predominantly use attorney ad litems right now, which is an attorney they appoint for the child, and in that way the attorney ad litem can meet with the child and really determine why that child is choosing one parent or another, and that is typically how the court becomes aware of the child's preference.
And so does that happen in every case that an ad litem, who is just a lawyer who practices in the community or whatever, but also represents children in these cases?
That's right.
Will there always be an ad litem for the children?
Not always, but like I said, the courts in Benton County and Washington County are very much using the attorney ad litems currently, and it's just becoming more prevalent in the court system. Typically, one attorney or the other for, you know, in a divorce case, if there are children, will ask the court to appoint an attorney ad litem.
And so, in general, an ad litem and the judge are going to look at everything on a case-by-case situation and see, you know, is this child mature? Is what they're saying accurate?
Yeah, is there undue influence from one parent or another source? You know, are there ponies being purchased and Corvettes being promised and things like that? And, you know, the only flat, easy answer to the magic age question is, yeah, 18. I mean, that's when the child can say, I'm not going, this is where I want to live, you know, and at the time they reach adulthood, that's up to them.
All right, so what's another one?
Well, there's a little offshoot of that one, which is, well, my daughter is 14 now, and she doesn't have to go visit her father. So same thing, same story. If there's a visitation order in place and you're the custodial parent, then you better make sure that the visitation order is followed, or the repercussion is going to be on you. The judge can punish you and can fine you in contempt for not making sure that your child obeys the order.
Well, what do you do? I mean, I imagine there are some cases where a child, a teenager especially, just says, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that.
Sure.
And what can the parent do, Victoria?
The best advice that I can give to parents is it is the primary custodian's firm responsibility to get that child in the car and get that child to the parent's house and to the non-custodial parent's house. And unless they have an extremely good explanation as to why that child cannot be at that other parent's house, they better do everything they can to get that child there.
Mm-hmm. Absent abuse or, you know, some addiction problem that is readily apparent in the non-custodial parent's home, you got to get that child in the car and get them. So use every tool in the box. Use the consequences you have. Take away the devices. Take away the car. You know, ground them. Treat them like any other, like they're committing any other infraction. And then, you know, you sometimes have to get the non-custodial parent involved. I think it's a good idea to let them know that this is happening, but that you're on the same page with the non-custodial parent and that visitation will happen.
Right. And I mean, so much of this is about communication. And if the parties, you know, the parents and the children can all get together and work it out, that's usually the best thing, I imagine.
It is.
All right. So what's another one where people might have one idea of the way things work, but the reality is something else?
Yeah. So I have a lot of folks come in and they'll say, well, I want joint custody so that there's no child support. And that may be true in some other states, and the laws vary pretty widely with regard to custody preferences and child support from state to state. But in Arkansas, presently, what the courts are going to try to achieve with regards to child support is to make sure that the child really can't tell the difference when they go back and forth from one house to the other financially. So you want the court's going to encourage a scenario where the parents can maintain sort of an equal standard of living for the child in either house. And so what that usually means, what it usually looks like, is the court's going to calculate how much child support one parent would pay if the other parent had custody, and then vice versa. And if there's a difference, the court will try to even it out. There's a couple variations on that formula, but I think that it's a pretty it would serve a potential custodial parent well to know that no matter what custody arrangement they reach, there will be some form of child support.
And I think in general, there's probably some misunderstanding about what joint custody is and what it really means. Victoria, what is joint custody? I mean, does that mean time spent with the children is exactly equal? All decision making is joint decision making?
The best answer I can give you is that the courts, typically when they are awarding joint custody, they mean they want each parent to be spending an equal amount of time with the child, 50-50 across the board, which means it can be a week-on, week-off arrangement, it can be a 2-2-3 arrangement, or it can really be anything else that the parties can dream up, and which is a 50-50 breakdown of time with the child. And just as Kristen noted, the courts want the child to not only be spending equal time with each parent, but to not really notice any difference in the parent's home. And so that is why they do a disparity in income calculation for child support purposes. Joint custody is also equal decision making, which means if parent A wants the child to be enrolled in soccer and parent B wants the child to be enrolled in basketball, then the parties have to come to some agreement. So if the parties are not in agreement, then the child is not going to be enrolled in that activity.
And that dovetails pretty well into the next urban myth.
Which, all right.
And this one's a little newer than the other ones, but the idea that parallel parenting is the same as joint custodial parenting. And parallel parenting is not a lawyer word. It's more of a therapeutic word. I hear that coming from parents who rightly have tried to go to co-parenting classes or tried to learn more about what what co-parenting or joint custody parenting might be like. And the way I understand it is parallel parenting is the idea that in my house, things might be one way, but it's not the business of the other parent really how my house functions. Like your circus, your monkeys over there, my circus, my monkeys over here. And that essentially the parents might share equal time, but they really don't integrate the households, the rules, the schedules, the financial obligations, consequences for discipline, things like that. Each manages their own household and they don't ask questions. And what I have found is that is absolutely contrary to what the judges, especially in this area of the state, expect from our joint custodial parents. They are not going to let that fly. If you are co-parenting, you have a joint custody arrangement, and you are not communicating frequently and thoroughly with the other parent, the judge is going to probably bust up that joint custodial arrangement because it's just not functioning the way the courts intend for it to.
Well, and in your experience, Victoria, does joint custody usually work? Or one, is that usually what is awarded in a case? Two, does it usually work, or do we see the breakdown like Kristen was just talking about?
Mason just threw a big bomb at
you,
Victoria.
That's a little bit hard to respond to. Joint custody is becoming more prevalent in Arkansas, and particularly in Northwest Arkansas, where I'm practicing.
Now have a state law that says that it's favored.
That's
right.
Correct. That's correct.
What does that mean exactly, Victoria?
What does that mean? Well, it means that the legislature has said that they are preferring joint custody arrangements, and that means that the courts are supposed to follow that law. And my experience has been the courts are leaning towards preferring that. Some courts are slower than others to get to that point. If you're a practicing attorney up here in Northwest Arkansas, you know which judges prefer it more so than others. But joint custody is hard. It's a co-parenting arrangement. You're dealing with people who are choosing to be divorced because they can no longer live with one another, and yet we're asking them to effectively communicate and co-parent to productively raise this productive child.
Yeah, when you're getting a divorce, you pretty much stop giving the other person the benefit of the doubt, right? Like you stop making excuses, allowances, forgiving them their small, sins, and because you're going to divorce them. And then to all of a sudden, or I guess maybe not all of a sudden, but to then recommit to raising a child with them, in which you are going to have to give them the benefit of the doubt a lot, and you're going to have to trust them, and you're going to have to delegate or give up some of your control to them. It is tough.
And I imagine it gets even tougher in situations where people are remarrying.
Yeah.
Or if there's stepchildren brought in.
Sure. I mean, the more variables you bring in, the more difficult it is, because it's no longer about mom and dad making decisions for the child. You have mom and dad making decisions, and then you have grandparents weighing in, and you have stepmom who has an opinion or a schedule of her own with her own kids that might conflict with the schedule that you believe is reasonable for your child. And so, I mean, there's just a number of factors, and it takes a very mature and sort of a emotionally regular person to facilitate a joint custody arrangement. If you are prone to letting your emotions get the better of you, it's probably going to be a challenge.
All right. Let me wrap up with this quickly. What would each of you say is the one big mistake that clients make, either in divorce or custody, that can be and should be avoided?
Telling the kids too much, telling the kids the truth, explaining those adult matters to the kids, thinking that it will somehow make it better, easier, protect the love that the parent and child has, help them understand. That is BS. It does not make things easier for the child. The children in divorce, the kids are, if they're smart, if they're intelligent, if they're of a certain age, they're going to want to have some answers. They're going to ask questions. But what the kids need to know is that they have two parents that love them very much, and that the children are free to continue to love each parent, no matter that they live in separate houses, no matter that they, you know, have other relationships, that those kids should feel free and encouraged to love the other parent and to want to be with them and spend time with them too.
And Victoria, I mean, how difficult is it when a client comes in, maybe you have that conversation with them, but they say, my kid's getting older, they're asking questions. What kind of line are you drawing where you can include them but also not include them too much?
Well, I think that's individual to each particular child and mm-hmm. their age and their maturity level. But I think to answer your original question, I think I always urge my clients to communicate. If they do one thing, if they learn one thing from me throughout the process of their divorce, is that they have to learn to effectively communicate with this person who is no longer their number one person in their book. And if they can learn to effectively communicate in a respectful manner, it just bleeds over to the child, sees it. They know that mom respects dad and dad respects mom, even though I've got, you know, even though the child has two different homes to live in, they can see it. And it's, you know, whether it's on social media or emails or texts. I mean, kids are so savvy. I mean, my five-year-old knows how to open my iPhone and get to the text and get to Netflix and whatever. And so you have to know that your child is going to see that communication between you and the other parent, and it needs to be positive. And so sometimes, you know, I just advise my clients to swallow that pill and put
don't
down.
Be ugly.
Yeah, don't do
be
it. Just don't be ugly. Just be the bigger person.
Well, that's pretty good advice in all things. Definitely good advice in the family law arena.
Let your lawyer be ugly.
That's right. Victoria, Kristen, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Inside Look at Legal with your hosts, Keith, Miller, Butler, Schneider, and Pollack. Learn more at www.arkattorneys.com.